I'm sure he could tell you more, but I wanted to make the point. It's not a subject you can reduce down to just a little eighth of an inch booklet. Now, to show that the subject has a wide foci of attention, I'm on shamanism. The Way of the Shaman by Michael Harner, PhD from University of California, Berkeley, teaches anthropology in the graduate faculty of the New School for Social Research in New York. Currently co-chairman of the anthropological section of the New York Academy of Sciences. He has become a practicing shaman, but it wasn't always that way. Chapter 1. My first prolonged field work as an anthropologist took place more than two decades ago on the forested eastern slopes of the Ecuadorian Andes among the Jivaro Indians, or the Unsuri Shuar. The Jivaro were famous at that time for their now essentially vanished practice of head shrinking and for their intensive practice of shamanism, which still continues. I successfully collected a great deal of information on their culture during 1956 and 57, but remained an outside observer of the world of the shaman. Now, shamanism postulates, I'll try to say this in a sentence because I've already said it, and I'd like to get into this before we leave Dallas-Fort Worth and Channel 30 in Memphis. Shamanism postulates different states of consciousness, to simplify it. The ordinary state of consciousness sees the world as it is. The shaman enters into a state of consciousness called the shaman state of consciousness, where he is in another state of reality and being. And what we call fantasy becomes reality to him, and what we call reality becomes unreality to him. And the accomplished shaman can move from one to the other without the help of hallucinatory aids, drugs, or chemistry. Now, the Jivaro Indians use these hallucination drugs. That's where he started. But accomplished shamans in many other cultures don't need them. I'm not for or against at this point. I'm exploring to make the point with Gestalt, hey, there's a vast evidentiary field of preternatural, unnatural, extranatural, supernatural activity, totally ignored by this Western materialistic, science-dominated culture that have become as constricted in their viewpoint and frame of reference in some ways as the traditional Christians that bind you under a black tent of tradition. I want to open us up and then confirm the authority of the Bible, who's always postulated these extra realms of being. The Jivaro were famous for head shrinking. Essentially vanished now, but not totally. And shamanism, which still continues. I successfully collected a great deal of information on their culture during 56 and 1957, but remained an outside observer. A couple of years later, oh, I know you want me to finish that exorcism, but you'll like this when I get into it. And I want the broad frame of reference before I tie all the knots. And I'm the teacher. A couple of years later, the American Museum of Natural History invited me to make a year-long expedition to the Peruvian Amazon. Now, some awful smart people lived in this area sometime who did those markings on the high desert, the plateau, the Andes plateau of Peru. American Museum of Natural History, do you understand that this is not some gook again? The American Museum of Natural History invited me to make a year-long expedition to the Peruvian Amazon to study the culture of the Conibo Indians of the Ucayali River region. You say, what's a gook? Well, bureaucrat. I accepted, delighted to have an opportunity to do more research on the fascinating upper Amazon forest cultures. That fieldwork took place in 1960 and 1961. two particular experiences I had among the Kurubo, or the Conibo, and the Hivaro were basic to my discovering the way of the shaman in both these cultures. And I would like to share them with you. Perhaps they will convey something of the incredible hidden world open to the shamanic explorer. I'd been living for the better part of a year in a Conibo Indian village beside a remote lake off a tributary of the Rio Ucayali. My anthropological research on the culture of the Conibo had been going well, but my attempts to elicit information on their religion met with little success. The people were friendly, but reluctant to talk about the supernatural. Finally, they told me that if I really wished to learn, I must take the shaman's sacred drink made from ayahuasca, the soul vine. I agreed, with both curiosity and trepidation, for they warned me that the experience would be very frightening. The next morning, now, immediately the skeptic's going to say, aha, acid, hallucinatory drugs. You don't have to go to Amazon. Just live in Berkeley a few years ago. Hate Ashbury. Oh, you just laugh at that. I'm in San Francisco. Some poor guy came from out of the area. It was a standard joke up there when I lived there. Some guy came from somewhere in the country, and all the hippies were congregated at Hate Ashbury. And it's spelled H-A-I-G-H-T or something like that. But this guy came and said, well, all these hippies talk about love. If love's important to them, why do they live in Hate Ashbury? I didn't think it was that funny either. I mean, I try to keep you from getting too scared, but you won't cooperate. I agreed with both curiosity and trepidation. You're going to say acid head. Oh. There are lots of PhDs from Berkeley, acid head. No, I'm just introducing shamanism. Accomplished shamans need none of this in many cultures. This was the way he was introduced. The next morning, my friend Thomas, the kind elder of the village, went into the forest to cut the vines. You want me to tell you who I believe continued shamanism? Nimrod. It was his ability to deliver people from their fear of animals that set up the first rebel kingdom. But that's another subject. Next morning, my friend Thomas, the kind elder of the village, went into the forest to cut the vines. Before leaving, he told me to fast, a light breakfast and no lunch. He returned midday with enough ayahuasca vines and leaves of the kawa plant to fill a 15-gallon pot. He boiled them all afternoon until only about a quart of dark liquid remained. This he poured into an old bottle and left it to cool until sunset, when he said we would drink it. I want some of you moonshiners down there in the South, or wherever you may be, to know you ain't got all the secrets. The Indians muzzled the dogs in the village so that they could not bark. The noise of barking dogs could drive a man who had taken ayahuasca mad. The children were cautioned to be quiet, and silence came over the small community with the setting of the sun. I want to see if this guy's going to drink this. This would make Johnny Walker red. Look like pomegranate juice. The children were cautioned to be quiet, and silence came over the small community with the setting of the sun. As the brief equatorial twilight was replaced by darkness. Tomas poured about a third of the bottle. That had been 15 gallon. That means 5 gallon distilled. About a third of the bottle into a gourd bowl and gave it to me. All the Indians were watching. I felt like Socrates amidst his Athenian compatriots accepting the hemlock. It occurred to me that one of the alternate names people in the Peruvian Amazon gave ayahuasca was, quote, the little death. I drank the potion quickly. It had a strange, slightly bitter taste. I then waited for Thomas to take his turn. But he said that he had decided not to participate after all. Stupid fool, I'd have said, no, you first. Ain't no Texan have been tricked into this, or Kentuckian, I'll tell you that. They had me lie down on the bamboo platform under the great thatched roof of the communal house. I wonder if the American Museum of Natural History, to study the culture of the Coniba Indians in the Ucayali River region, anticipated this. They had me lie down on the bamboo platform under the great thatched roof of the communal house. The village was silent, except for the chirping of crickets and the distant calls of a howler monkey deep in the jungle. As I stared upward into the darkness, faint lines of light appeared. I want to tell you something. Remember that boy David who could see through walls and see through things? Shaman, when they pass from ordinary state of consciousness to the shaman state of consciousness, can see through opaque things. Well, they can't. It's solid. Don't you understand that what we call solid is not solid? There's more space in that camera and in this wall and in me than there is what we call solid matter. And when you extend your sensory apparatus to the electrons, the atoms, the neutrons, and the protons doing their little thing, if you could extend it further, you'd find those little solid, quote, entities are more space and things, whatever things are, if they are. It's relative. In the state of shaman consciousness, accomplished shamans can see through opaque things. Now, is that a changed state of the same person, or a change of the person to a state of being of a supernatural entity? And if so, did David, under possession, through the possession of the supernatural or preternatural entity, move into that state of consciousness where he could see that way? I just want to raise a question at this point. Overhead, the faint lines became brighter and gradually interlaced to form... Oh, wait a minute. As I stared upward into the darkness, faint lines of light appeared. They grew sharper, more intricate, and burst into brilliant colors. Sound came from far away, a sound like a waterfall, which grew stronger and stronger until it filled my ears. Just a few minutes earlier, I'd been disappointed, sure that the ayahuasca was not having and was not going to have any effect on me. Now the sound of rushing water flooded my brain. My jaw began to feel numb. The numbness was moving up to my temples. Overhead, the faint lines became brighter and gradually interlaced to form a canopy resembling a geometric mosaic of stained glass. The bright violet hues formed an ever-expanding roof above me. You say, yeah, acid trip. Well, we'll see. Let's keep going. Within this celestial cavern, I heard the sound of water grow louder. And I could see dim figures engaged in shadowy movements. Now, I want to make the record clear. I think anybody takes dope's dope. You gotta be a dope to take dope. I want to make it clear in case somebody tunes in and thinks they got a Timothy Leary here. I don't even like Novocaine. I want to see the dentist coming at me. So don't say that. Within this celestial cavern, I heard the sound of water grow louder. And I could see dim figures engaged in shadowy movements. Is this fantasy? As you get into shamanism, you'll find that what we call fantasy is reality to the shaman. And he doesn't need these hallucinatory drinks to do it. As that servant of Elisha didn't need to see unseen figures that were there all along. In that case, they were good figures, but they were there to counteract bad ones. As my eyes seemed to adjust to the gloom, the moving scene resolved itself into something resembling a huge funhouse, a supernatural carnival of demons. In the center, presiding over the activities and looking directly at me, was a gigantic, grinning, crocodilian head from whose cavernous jaws gushed a torrential flood of water. And when the dragon saw, Revelation 12, a habit pattern maybe. This guy's an atheist. He admits it later. He didn't know anything about this verse of Scripture. When the dragon saw that he was cast under the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child, Revelation 12:13. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. Now you'd think that this guy was having image, fantasy, impressions from past knowledge, except he will later admit, when a missionary that he goes to and talks about this points out that verse of Scripture, he'd never heard of it, never knew it. That's a future thing yet to come. But he sees this grinning crocodilian head from whose cavernous jaws gushed a torrential flood of water. Slowly the waters rose, and so did the canopy above them until the scene metamorphosed into a simple duality of blue sky above and sea below. All creatures had vanished. Then from my position near the surface of the water, I began to see two strange boats wafting back and forth, floating through the air towards me, coming closer and closer. They slowly combined to form a single vessel with a huge dragon-headed prow, not unlike that of a Viking ship. Set amidship was a square sail. Gradually, as the boat gently floated back and forth above me, I heard a rhythmic swishing sound and saw that it was a giant galley with several hundred oars moving back and forth in cadence with the sound. I became conscious, too, of the most beautiful singing I'd ever heard in my life, high-pitched and ethereal, emanating from myriad voices on board the galley. As I looked more closely at the deck, I could make out large numbers of people with heads of blue jays and the bodies of humans, not unlike the bird-headed gods of ancient Egyptian tomb paintings. At the same time, some energy essence began to float from my chest up into the boat. although I believed myself to be an atheist, I was completely certain that I was dying and that the bird-headed people had come to take my soul away on the boat. While the soul flow continued from my chest, I was aware that the extremities of my body were going numb. Starting with my arms and legs, my body slowly began to feel like it was turning to solid concrete. I couldn't move or speak. Gradually, as the numbness closed in on my chest toward my heart, I tried to get my mouth to ask for help, to ask the Indians for an antidote. Now, did this drink transport him to some deep recess of his mind? Or did this chemical make connection with a preternatural world, like going through a black hole, giving these impressions to him? And did the possession of David in the other book give him consciousness of this other world? It had the capacity to break through, but most of the other people in the ordinary world could not be tuned to it because they weren't possessed as David was. You want me to continue? Huh? This is a PhD from Berkeley. Now, you know, there are people who've been on acid trips to tell you strange things. This is going to go beyond that. You interested? Starting with my arms and legs, my body slowly began to feel like it was turning to solid concrete. I couldn't move or speak. Gradually, as the numbness closed in on my chest toward my heart, I tried to get my mouth to ask for help, to ask the Indians for an antidote. I'd have been Cousin Thomas at that point. Try as I might, however, I could not marshal my abilities sufficiently to make a word. Simultaneously, my abdomen seemed to be turning to stone. I had to make a tremendous effort to keep my heart beating. I began to call my heart my friend, my dearest friend of all, to talk to it, to encourage it to beat with all the power remaining at my command. Now, how could he talk to his heart and not talk to his... Let's go on. I became aware of my brain. I felt physically that it had become compartmentalized into four separate and distinct levels. Now, when Edgar Cayce went to sleep and began to talk with those readings, did he become one with some preternatural being that had been around through all of those eons of time that could tell him all of those things that were so accurate? There's a whole big world out there that's totally ignored in a materialistic scientific community. I'm not wanting to scare people. I teach you faith. If you are faithing, even faithing little ways like we do here on the phones, battling this budget we've committed ourselves to, and you faith in your personal life, taking the promises of God, God's Spirit in you is there as God's gift to the faither who keeps the faithing connection. Greater is he that's in us than he that's in the world. But it's time we recognize these realities. I became aware of my brain. I felt physically. Give me just a hair more, but don't whistle my mic. And you talk to a mic if it gets a ring. I became aware of my brain. I felt physically that it had become compartmentalized into four separate and distinct levels. Was it his brain he became aware of? Or did he become a part of a larger brain, as some views of life would have it? You say, Gene, you're predictable. You're a biblicist. What are you coming up with all these wild questions for? We'll see, won't we? At the uppermost surface of the brain was the observer and commander. which was conscious of the condition of my body and was responsible for the attempt to keep my heart going. It perceived, but purely as a spectator, the visions emanating from what seemed to be the nether portions of my brain. Immediately below the topmost level, I felt a numbered layer. Do you have any idea how many pots would have been boiling in Berkeley in the 60s if they'd had this soul vine? Immediately below the topmost level, I felt a numbered layer, which seemed to have been put out of commission by the drug. It just wasn't there. The next level down was the source of my visions, including the soul boat that was sucking my soul out with those birds or those beings with blue jay heads and human bodies. Now I was virtually certain I was about to die. As I tried to accept my fate, answer at King's House 1 over there, don't listen to me and not answer the phone. As I tried to accept my fate, an even lower portion of my brain began to transmit more visions and information. Now, was this his brain? Was he looking inward? Or had he been pulled out and connected to another realm of being? An even lower portion of my brain began to transmit more visions and information. Only thing I can say, thank God that that's the order. That the commander was on top and this was on the bottom. Been off many other way around. An even lower portion of my brain began to transmit more visions and information. I was told that this new material was being presented to me because I was dying and therefore safe to receive these revelations. These were the secrets reserved for the dying and the dead, I was informed. I could only very dimly perceive the givers of these thoughts. I say that slow. I could only very dimly perceive the givers of these thoughts. Giant reptilian creatures reposing sluggishly at the lowermost depths of the back of my brain, where it met the top of the spinal column. I could only vaguely see them in what seemed to be gloomy, dark depths. Then they projected a visual scene in front of me. First, they showed me the planet Earth as it was eons ago, before there was any life on it. I saw an ocean, barren land, bright blue sky. Then black specks dropped from the sky by the hundreds and landed in front of me on the barren landscape. Now, I wouldn't be reading this with any more attention than the written down record or tape recorded record of somebody describing an acid trip they'd just been on, except that this is the prelude to his introduction into shamanism that led him to become a white shaman who practiced healing through shamanism. This is just the beginning.
This is the end of side 3. For more of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side 4. Thank you.